introduce yourself. Can you talk a bit about who you are, where you came from, whether you grew up in BC?
Oh, yeah. Well, my name's Peggy Kennedy, and I actually was born in Alaska. We went back and forth a bit to Victoria and Hyder, Alaska, during my early years, but we finally moved for good to Victoria when I was about 11. And I guess until I was 21, I really had dual citizenship, you know, Canadian and American. But I've lived on the West Coast all my life, except for the 10 years I spent in England. Went to school in Victoria. Went to Victoria College when it was still in the old Grey Derrick Castle. I don't know if you know that. It's sort of a folly of one of the coal kings. He built a castle.
Is it Dunsmuir?
Yeah. On a hill in Victoria, and it was later transmogrified into a two-year college, which was part of UBC at the time.
Wow.
And later it became, it was sort of the start of UVic. Anyway, I went there. Let's see, where are we? You immigrated, yes. I guess I did immigrate. But my mother was Canadian, Canadian Indian.
Did you grow up on a reserve?
No, no. We grew up in a very small town in Alaska. It's Hyder. It's got a population of 200 when they're all home. Still has, I guess.
What did your family do for a living?
Well, my father was kind of an entrepreneur. He had a lot of hotels and different other businesses in various parts of the States before he came to Alaska. And he had some hotels, the only two working hotels, I guess, in Hyder at the time.
And when did you begin to work?
He grew up state, a lot of prospectors, too, which was another interesting... Wow. I don't know what else he did. I never knew. He just went to work and came home. I was married at the end of World War II, which was about 1945, I guess. And, my husband and I both worked in Boeing aircraft during the war. That's how I met him. We've got two kids. They were born in 47 and 48. I'm worrying about this next one. What daily work was necessary to maintain your home?
Maybe we should talk about that later when we talk about what it was like to work and also the family. Mm-hmm. When did you begin to work?
Before I was married, I finished my third year at UBC. This was a big adventure, going over to Vancouver and going to university there instead of going to a small college. And after that, I started college in 1939. I remember the September I started was when the war started as well. So the war had been going for 3 years when I finished my third year. And I, we were all broke for a start. And for another thing, I felt I should do my part for the war effort. And I went to work in Boeing Aircraft for the war industry. And well, that wasn't really my first job. I'd worked at summer jobs before and part-time jobs in stores, berry picking.
Did you look for work during the Depression at all? And find it hard to find? Or
I was kind of young. I was just in high school then, and my mom was supporting us. She was a dressmaker, and a very creative one, too. But I did work from time to time as a store clerk, you know, the 30-cent an hour jobs that we were lucky to get.
Yeah.
I like it.
What was it like working in Boeing? What were the working conditions like?
In some ways, it was quite stimulating working in Boeing. There were a lot of women working there. And one of the first things, I went to work first as a stores clerk, which meant I was handing out little parts, numbered parts, in a sub-assembly shop. And one of the first things that my fellow worker said to me is, we've got a union here, and you'll be expected to join. But I was sort of preconditioned for that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to work there. I wanted to join the union and take part in it. Soon after I joined, we had kind of a protest about the lack of rest periods, because we went through from, 7:30 to 12? I don't remember when we had lunch, 7:30 to 11:30 or something, and half an hour for lunch, and then right from 12 to 3:30. And a lot of the union people looked up the research that showed that people worked more efficiently if they had rest periods. And so one morning, everybody sat down and had a rest period. Didn't that lead to a lockout, Stuart?
Pardon?
The rest periods, sit down?
After about 2 days, they locked us out. Everyone's lockout strike it was.
Yeah, like if we're going to sit down for 10 minutes every morning and every afternoon, they weren't coming in. So, yeah, that led to a lockout.
We won the rest period, though.
Yes, that's right. Came back with the rest period.
How long were you locked out?
About 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. See, I'm glad you remember that. I don't...
Yes, I was involved.
Yeah, I wasn't very involved in the union when I first started. You know, I was a union member. I'm glad to be one. I went to the meetings, which is more than most union members do in any organization. Hours. I think it was a good 8 hours a day, not counting the lunch hour. Safety conditions. One of the things I remember was that women's always complaining about the style of hat they had to wear. They had to wear a turban wrapped around, because no Veronica Lake hairdos, which were the in thing at the time.
Because they could get caught in the machinery.
Yeah, So the women had to have all their hair tucked under these hats and overalls.
What kind of work did the women do?
A lot of sub-assembly work. I don't remember them working in the machine shop and the heat treat or things like that. Do you, Stuart?
Oh, in a minor scale of heat treat. Mostly light assemblies, and also very much in electrical assemblies, small panel, electrical panels.
A lot of inspectors, about half the inspectors were women.
A lot of inspectors assembly work.
Was that the same work that men did?
It was the same work, but there was a lot of work that men did that women didn't. You know, like the real machinist work. The wages were exactly the same as those of men. Stuart was saying, we were talking about this, you know, he said, well, you know, the reason there wasn't a women's consciousness raising group or anything was that men and women were exactly equal in the union. That is, if you were hired as a beginner, you got 40 cents an hour whether you were a man or a woman. And, you know, after 6 months, you got raised to 50 cents an hour and so on. But on the other hand, I never heard of one woman ever being promoted to a foreman. You know, and there were a lot of foremen there. Even, what do they call, lead hands.
Right.
I don't remember a woman being a lead hand. There may have been one or two, but every crew of six or seven had a lead hand, and they were always men. You know, they get 10 cents an hour extra or something.
Did management have the right to decide who worked in what job categories, or was that...
Oh, yeah.
So it was their choice not to employ women in certain kinds of jobs?
Yes. At the same time, You know, I don't remember the union asking for women in certain kinds of jobs. Do you remember that? Stuart, quit reading. Listen.
Well, management. Management hired the people. One department wanted 5 people or 150 people. Management hired them.
Yeah.
And the union had them the same. They hired men or women.
Mm-hmm. But I don't remember that being raised as an issue by
the
union.
Would it relate to some of those categories requiring skills that women might not have?
Like? Yeah. Yeah, partly that. But they did have a training set up where they trained women and men.
Training. Very bad training. Right?
Mm-hmm. For sub-assembly work and assembly work.
Was there like a really big growth in the number of workers in the Boeing plants because of the war?
100%. They didn't have any before.
Well,
God.
I'd say 1,000%. They were just mushrooms.
Yeah, but there weren't any before.
Well, yeah, okay. Just going that little thing down on Pearl Harbor, very, very small, float plane thing they had going there.
Oh,
they made a decision to build it here, directed from Seattle. And the superintendents were from Seattle.
Oh yeah, our head offices were all in Seattle.
The main plants in Seattle, and I guess that went down 12,000 people.
Wow.
And so, you know, mm-hmm. From that time, mm-hmm. History of the industry.
And where did these people come from who were hired? Was it mostly people from...
Everywhere in B.C.
Right.
Some from the Prairie Provinces, yeah. Some from Alberta, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. A lot of women whose men were in the army came over the first day. Were men and women separated by location? No. Job category? Not exclusively, but they were partly. And they worked on the same jobs up to a point until you got to the higher, more responsible job. They received equal benefits, equal wages, but not equal promotion.
Was there any separate seniority lists for men or women, or were they on the same list?
They were on the same list. And their automatic raises, you know, they were equally distributed to men and women, maybe 6 months or whatever it was.
What role did the lead hands play? Did they set the pace of work? Was it piecework or hourly rates?
Oh no, it was hourly rates. And the lead hands had to, I guess they got from the foreman what they were supposed to do, you know, what sub-assemblies they were needed, and they'd go and draw out the parts from the store and assign the jobs to the different workers and see that they did it properly and see that it got done. And
so that was supervision, more or less?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very much so. And they worked, too. They didn't just supervise. Each shop, you know, the whole plant was divided into shops, and each shop had a foreman and about 3 assistant foremen with 3 shifts.
In the shops, did people work on, when you talk about a sub-assembly, is that like a whole part of an aircraft that you
yeah.
would all work
mm-hmm.
on collectively?
They might do a blister or something, you know. Lucite housing for the cockpit or something. But I never worked in the main plant. I worked in the sub-assembly plants in right down on Georgia Street. We used to have our main concert hall in Vancouver was the Georgia Auditorium, concert hall, sports hall, and everything. And that was converted into plant 1A at Boeing. And they had a plant, which I think is now, or probably isn't there now. It was previously a
shipbuilding place, and it went back to being a shipbuilding outfit after the war. Plant 1, that was the main downtown plant. Plant 1A was the Georgia Auditorium.
Right.
And the main plant was out on Sea Island.
What kind of different jobs did you have actually within the plant?
Myself, I started as a stores clerk.
Right.
And I changed to being a shop clerk very early, which is kind of the secretary to the foreman. Do the typing and send out the memos and draw up the shift chains and so on.
What was the atmosphere like on the shop floor? Did workers relate well to each other? Was there pressure to produce?
Yeah, workers got along with each other. Their main sort of relaxation after hours was bitching about what an awful foreman we had. We had some really awful ones too. I think they did. I think they chose quite poorly what kind of foreman they'd have. Our foreman, I think, was a former shoe salesman who really, you know, you would expect to be able to respect your foreman because he, in the machinist union, he'd know something about machine work and something mm-hmm. about assembly, but he just knows something about what do they call it? Brown nosing?
Shoes.
Yeah. Licking boots and things. And our farmers, I know, had very little respect from the people who knew the job because they know they knew it better than he did. The people that didn't know the job because they didn't like him personally.
And they weren't going to learn from him necessarily.
No, it actually wasn't the foreman's job to teach anybody.
Right.
He just had to administer, and I suppose it wasn't really that much of a job. Like, they didn't know anything about machine work, but it didn't promote a good feeling in the plan.
Did the union set up the training programs, or was that
no,
done?
No,
it's management.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go through one of those?
No.
Yeah. Right, and the women who worked, who came into the industry during the war, what kind of women were they? Were they single? Were they married? And was there a change during the process?
Yeah, well, I guess a lot of them, well, they were single and married. About 50-50 as far as I can remember. They were mostly quite young.
Was it their first job for a lot of them?
For a lot of them, yeah. And it's a lot of married women who had no idea of making a career,
mm-hmm.
but whose husbands were overseas or whose husbands were working in the shipyards or in Boeing's, and thought, well, this is one way we'll be able to get ahead. You know, having lived through the Depression, now their husband finally had a steady job, and they could get a job too, get a stake and buy a house. This was the dream of most of them. Well, I won't say most, but a lot of women
right.
who went to work during the war. It wasn't the idea, this is woman's lib, we've got the right to work and we're going to work. It was the thought that, you know, we've got the chance to work, and we've been poor for so long, we'd just like to get ahead, get a bit of money put aside.
Once you'd married, did you continue to work?
Yeah, I stayed home with the babies up to the time they were about 3 and 4, I guess. And I really didn't go back to work because I wanted to go back to work. I went back to work because we were broke.
That was after the war, though?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right.
Yes, they were born in 47 and 48.
Can you talk a little bit about attitudes within your family and within your community about women having jobs? And also whether that changed with the war some?
Yeah, it probably did change with the war. How did Stuart feel about my working? You can correct me if I'm wrong, Stu. Are you listening? The next question is, how did your husband feel about your working after the babies were, well, you know, 2 and 3, 3 or 4 or something? I think at first he didn't like it, but he accepted it, you know, as a reality.
It was unfortunate that it was necessary.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be a better word, necessary. It was necessary, okay, it has to be done. And appreciated it, so.
Yeah, and Stuart has always been very unusual in that, you know, as long as we were both working, we shared the work at home. You know, it wasn't the fact that I had to do the full load at home and the full load at work, like most women did, even progressive women. And my family viewed women working as a matter of course. At the time I was raised, it wasn't that unusual, or maybe just a little before my generation. Women were raised with the idea that you're going to have a career. You're not going to just be a woman mother. This is the sort of the first woman's lib movement that I came sort of just after, but my mother was really affected by it. And she was a very independent woman. And it was the depression that made her, you know, work full-time for a living, but she always felt it was a very respectable thing to do. And, although in my youth, when we had a fair amount of money, she used to fantasize about me being a lady of leisure. I doubt if she ever really believed it, but then she used to make up all kinds of
Did you have problems finding childcare arrangements once you had...
Oh, just terrible.
Yeah.
It was just awful finding someone to look after the kids. There was just no daycare. And the kids were 3 and 4, and I had a succession of sort of inept people. I remember once I had a young fellow that was in from the logging camps, and he was a really nice boy. He used to come and get the kids in the morning and dress them and change them and wheel them up to his mom for the day. Well, that was sort of an emergency operation, but I had a bunch of young girls, and the arrangements were, you know, I'd put an ad in the paper and try to pick the kindliest of the people, not the most efficient, but the kindliest of the people that applied, and I thought would be nice to the kids, you know, even if they left the house a mess. Kitty's clothes were all dirty, and Kitty's were dirty when I came over. So long as they were happy and they were kind to them, I would do that. Actually, eventually, I got sort of good at this, and I found a very nice woman who'd raised her own family, middle-aged woman, who's sort of a obsessive-compulsive woman, who I told her, you know, your job isn't to tidy, not housework. Just keep the kids busy and happy. But she tidied everything. She couldn't, the kind of person couldn't walk in a room without tidying it up and cleaning it, you know. And she was sort of a gem.
During the war, what arrangements did other women make? Did people talk about that at all in Boeing on the shop floor?
What did they do? They left them with relatives, I think, mostly. Most of the women I worked with were younger. You know, they didn't have kids. I think it was still general that people with families stayed home with them.
Did you get placed in your job through the National Selective Service? Is that how you found work at Boeing?
No, I just went to Boeing.
You heard they were hiring?
Yeah.
You went down
mm-hmm.
And when would you do your housework while you were working? Was Boeing shift work?
Boeing was shift work, yeah. It was 3 shifts. But being a shop clerk, I had 2 shifts, yeah, morning and afternoon. It was nice in a way, because I got to know all the people on all the shifts. You know, I'd be with one shift for day shift, and I'd change along with them for afternoons and weekends. When they went to graveyard, I'd get with another different group of people for days and with him. So I was with different people for 2 months at a time.
So people were on swing ships a lot then?
Yeah, they were monthly.
Why would they do that?
Because people didn't want to stay on afternoons or graveyards.
Right.
And they couldn't get steady workers for those, so they just swung them all. I had to take their turn. Monthly swing isn't as bad as weekly or two-weekly swing shift. And I don't know why industry still do that. It's devastating to the Constitution. It was bad enough. You know, monthly changes took about a week to recover, get your body rhythms in order. And then 3 weeks later, you're going through it all again. How did I arrange to do my housework? Well, I lived at home with my brothers and my mom when I was working at Bourne. We all moved to Vancouver, and we rented a really funny makeshift flat downtown. And that's right, that's for a year my mom didn't work. She stayed home and looked after us. And my older brother was a radio announcer in one of the local stations, and my younger brother was going to high school. And I was working at Bourne. And she was home. And it was nice. We enjoyed it. It was the first time I've ever had mom at home. And then came income tax time, and my older brother... No, we figured, well, I was making more money than he was, so I would list Major as a dependent. And she heard this argument about who's going to list her as a dependent, and she was so mad that anyone would call her dependent.
After having to support the family?
Yes, for so many years, and now all of a sudden she's a dependent. No explanation would satisfy her about that. But that was, then she rented a little shop and went back to working anyway. And we just shared the housework as we used to do when we were kids and Maiden was working. We used to always share the housework. My brother did the cooking.
Is that unusual for that period of time? Kind of.
I suppose it was.
Did people in your community, was it sort of a community situation where a lot of people worked in the war industries or in Boeing?
Yeah, a lot of people did, but it didn't seem to me like a community feeling. It was people from such scattered parts of Vancouver. And in those days, distances were further apart because people didn't have cars. Few people had phones even.
Right.
So it wasn't a community. We saw people at work, and we saw different people in our time off.
You've sort of answered the next three questions already. Did you leave Boeing after the war? Were there layoffs there?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was laid off.
Everybody.
Well, maybe there are a few. I don't know. I think they still had every time they shot, but... There were just massive layoffs after the end of the war.
It was a bad amount of site for maintenance for existing aircraft. The big human pride in the union's part was to, if we could get along and work cooperatively during a war period, why don't we extend this past the war period? Let's find some way of means of keeping this plant going. You don't have to make airplanes. Let's prefabricate housing or something. That's how it was. Approved by the authorities, and you talk through the holes in your head. She's going down.
Yeah.
At a great mass meeting in Old Athletic Park, about 7,000 union members one day, and trying to get this thing going. Yeah, but the government wasn't interested enough to give a second thought. By the board.
So the position of the union movement was to convert war industry into consumer oriented peacetime industry?
Long, yeah. We went over and lobbied the government and so on.
Was that also related to the position that the shipyard should start to produce a merchant fleet?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. So how did you become involved in trade unionism?
Oh, just by
just by going to work at Boeing's.
Well, I accepted the fact that if you worked in an industry, you joined that union.
Was that part of the attraction of getting an industrial job? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how had you become interested in
union
before
I
that?
I don't know. I guess I was interested, you know, intellectually in the progressive movement. And I'd met people in college who were interested in it. And, you know, I just thought I'd like to take part in it in a more active way.
Was your family pro-union?
Let me see. Yeah, sort of. They were just my mom and my two brothers. And of course, my younger brother is a lot younger than us. He's 7 years younger. My older brother, he was pro-union. Major was sort of whatever was going. You know, she always kept interested in everything we were doing in an intellectual way. And, you know, if we came up with some interesting idea, she'd be interested in it.
Right.
But, you know, she herself had never thought of being active in a union or had, you know, never even considered what would happen if one of her family got involved in a union. I don't think she thought about Tui. And she knew all about unions intellectually, but she hadn't thought of taking an active part. And so I don't know if you'd call her pro-union. Or she was pro-us, I guess.
Was the milieu you were part of in the university progressive generally? Is that the sentiment of...
No.
No.
No, there was a progressive movement in the university, but it was small.
And the community you lived in, was it pretty sympathetic to trade unionism?
Victoria? You're asking me as a teenager, you know, and I don't know.
Okay.
It might have been. I don't think it was terrible.
So can you describe a bit the process you went through where you went from being... a trade union rank and file member to becoming increasingly active within the union? You were shop steward.
Yes, Well, the first time anybody noticed me is when they wanted some news for the union paper from the plant, and so I said, sure, I'll write it. I don't know. I guess I was at the general meeting, and I said, oh, okay, I'll put in some news. And I wrote just a little article. It was sort of a funny one from our plan, from the union viewpoint. And everybody from the plant was surprised, because I think they thought that the shop clerk, who was sort of the foreman's secretary, would be sort of pro-management and anti-union. And so many people came around and said, did you really write that? I never thought you'd write something like that. And after that, and the union executive, you know, noticed, well, there's someone who's at least interested in the union there, and they asked me to be a shop steward. I think the union executive just asked people to be shop stewards, and they said, You didn't have to be
chief shop steward.
You didn't have to be elected as a shop steward. Chief shop steward came out and tried to dragoon somebody into taking the job. But, you know, then I was young and active, and I thought it was a great honor to be asked to be a shop steward. You know, I didn't care if everybody else in the shop had turned it down. I still thought it was a great honor to be a shop steward. And I was really glad to accept.
What would your duties be?
Well, to sort of interpret the union policy to the people on the floor. And at that time, there wasn't a checkoff. So I'd have to go around and ask all the new members if they'd become members and if they'd like to. And they said no, to persuade them otherwise. And keep up the old ones, dues, which was that was the worst job.
Did you have to process grievances?
Yeah.
What kind of grievances were there?
Things like people had been refused a raise when they when they were due for an automatic raise, or people had been hired at the wrong rate. You know, someone with experience in another shop was supposed to be hired at the mm-hmm. improver's rate instead of beginners. And what they did was fill out a grievance form. Yeah. And I would march into the foreman's office. There were only two foremen in my in Plant 1A. And one of them was quite nice, and one of them was quite awful, the one I was telling you about. And I'd march into their office and say, okay, and just show them the grievance form. And immediately the face would go purple. A grievance form. I don't know what management did to foremen who came in with grievance forms. It must have been something awful. Because they'd react to these grievance forms as though I was murdering them. And it was sort of an emotional experience to take a grievance form into a foreman. And you must remember too, these foremen, you know, I was in my teens.
Mm. They were generally older guys.
Yeah. Some were quite a bit older, but they were at least quite a bit older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't used to walking into people's offices with demands. But I found it interesting.
Did it change you in terms of your personality?
Yeah, I think so. Because for one thing, it made me more likely to speak up on issues, not so much for myself, because I thought I had something to say, but I had to understand what people's grievances were to explain them to the management, interpret them. And also in union meetings,
mm-hmm.
I got to know a lot of the women and a lot of the people, and I knew everybody in the plant because it's a small plant. And whenever an issue came up, I would always get up and speak on it so they'd know what my position was. Because sometimes when you're thinking about something, you want to know what someone that you know about, what their position is. So I got used to getting up in a big meeting and speaking, which wasn't easy.
It's a skill.
Yeah.
Did you mostly represent women in terms of being a steward? Or?
I did, because most of the people were women, right. But I didn't necessarily.
Was there a majority of women within the workplace?
Oh, yeah.
How many do you figure there were? You don't remember numbers, sort of ratio?
No, I sure don't. I wasn't conscious of it. But anyway, I guess, I think it was about 2-1.
Right, women to men.
Mm-hmm.
What union were you in? Was the international?
Yeah, the IAF, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
International Association of Machinists. Local 756. I became the editor of the newspaper.
Wow. Can you talk a bit about the newspaper?
Yeah, why I became the editor was because because I first wrote this paper, and the then editor of the paper was a very progressive person with whom I had taken honors French at UBC. So it was an old boys club, old persons club, I mean. And he left to edit the Fishermen's Union paper. No, he's not still there, but he stayed there for many, many years. He was very good at the technical end. Well, he was a good writer, and he was good at the technical end. And I learned everything about how to publish a small newspaper single-handed from him. And that's about what it was. Different union officials wrote columns, and the editor of the newspaper. It was only monthly. The editor wrote all the news. All the editors. Mm.
So you had a lot of influence in terms of setting policy around.
I suppose I did.
Yeah.
I don't feel I ever set policy because I was a member of the executive, too. I got to be Planet One A representative. And again, I was the only woman and the youngest person on the executive. I was always in that position in those days. I got so used to being the youngest person in the room that it's taken me years to realize that I'm not anymore.
Comes from being precocious.
Maybe that's it.
So was there a women's column in the... What was the name of the newspaper?
It was the 756 Review. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I think I've got a copy of it somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever seen that recently?
No,
I haven't seen it recently either, but I do have it somewhere.
No, I haven't seen it for decades.
It wouldn't be in our files. Hmm. Gee, I can't think where that is.
Was there a women's column?
No, there wasn't a women's column in it.
And
sorry, a women's what?
Women's column.
Column,
yeah.
Oh, kinds of women put bits and pieces in the paper.
Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a regular women's column for
lots
women.
Lots of women, though, shop stewards and that wrote their views on things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Anybody wanted to write about something, it was right in, man or woman.
Yeah.
Barbara used to put lots of stuff in.
Mm-hmm. Was the Boeing plant organized while you were there? Did the union come?
It was pretty well organized by the time I got there, but it wasn't a closed shop. It later became.
How did that take place? Was that through negotiations?
Yeah, through negotiation.
Okay. We sold the management on the idea it was an essential thing to have, and they finally chopped out a few small other things and said, it was the RAND formula.
Right.
You know, you understand the RAND, don't you?
Yeah.
You pay dues and it wasn't really a condition of employment, really, but you had to pay dues.
That's right. You didn't have to join the organization, but you had to pay dues.
But you're on the checkoff.
Did that mean that people who weren't in the union had voting rights in a strike situation or anything like that?
No.
No, you had to be a member.
Did the union change fairly dramatically when there was this large influx of people into it during the war? Had it been more like a craft union before that? Or?
Yeah, well, I don't know what it was before that. It probably wasn't much. They just had a few dozen people working for it. But it must have changed really dramatically.
Did that shake up the old leadership somewhat?
Well, I don't think there was a leadership. I don't know whether there even was a union before the war when there was the influx of people.
Did you have any paid positions in the union?
No, not really.
What was the employer's attitude towards the union?
Usual. Doing down. Pretty antagonistic.
Yeah, well, it's here. We have to look at it.
Mm. Were they afraid of conflict in terms of war production?
Took a little bit of selling that the union's interest was production, not just signing up members.
Yeah. I think the union really was more interested in production than the management. The management was interested in profits, but that's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn the tape over.